It went straight down the middle. Then it started to...
Welcome to another edition of For the Good of the Game and Bruce Devlin. Did this guest only win one major?
Well, this guest, I'll tell you, she's a 29 times professional wins. And yeah, she's got a credit for one major on the LPGA Tour and two on the Senior Tour. But to be quite honest with you, we're going to tell the story that she has actually five majors on the regular tour and two on the Senior Tour. So it is great to have this young lady with us today, Helen Alfredson. Thanks for joining, Mike and I. We look forward to this for a long time. Thanks.
Well, thank you, guys. I'm so excited to see you, Bruce. It was a long time, and get to know Michael has been very nice so far.
Good. Buenos dias.
Buenos dias para ti también.
Helen joins us this morning from, or this afternoon, I guess, in her time, from sunny Marbella, Spain, which is probably a little bit nicer today than your hometown of Gothenburg.
Yes, that's what I heard. They said, just stay there. I talked to my sister and she said, this is gray, every shade of gray. But home is home, I have to say. After we traveled so many years, you know, even when you take the dog out in the forest, you don't really care if it's that gray.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you heard all about Bruce and I from Beth Daniel and Meg Mallon. And what they probably told you is, we always start at the very beginning. So we're going to take you back to as early as you can remember, maybe not 1965, but sometime shortly thereafter. But tell us a little bit about what you remember, your earliest recollections of growing up in Gothenburg, Sweden.
Well, it's if it's with golf or just in general.
Yes.
Sports was very much my thing. My dad was a very good handball player. My mom played sports as well. And I think I was around 10 when, for no reason that I know, my dad decided that he wanted to play golf. So he took me to, he took the family to this golf course that I grew up on, which also Henrik Stenson grew up on, and Karin Koch. So we had pretty good players from there. And it was a great place to grow up. The golf course was a pretty tough one. And that was, and they were welcoming juniors with open arms. So we were able to practice and play and be on the golf course, which obviously I think helps when you're young. And there's not a lot of restrictions. Of course, we had to behave, which was probably my most difficult part. But I managed. I think they didn't throw me out.
Was golf a big deal back then in Sweden, or was that to come later?
No, it was still considered sort of a snob sport, an old man sport. Golf is very cheap in Sweden. You know, a medium or an average yearly cost is like $1,000. Which is really nothing, and we don't have monthly dues or anything like that, so it's very affordable. But for some reason, it just had that stamp on it that it was for rich people, sort of.
Mm-hmm. So you said you were 10, 11 or so when you kind of got introduced to the game. Tell us about your early experiences. First of all, what clubs did you play? Do you remember how they cobbled
well,
together?
Well, what do you think a person in my age was this Patty Berg 7-iron?
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. That's what my first club. And then my dad added a wedge and a 5-iron. And then I think I got some wood that was cut off, which is obviously not the greatest thing. And then I think I had 6 handicap when I got my first full set.
Okay.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Right.
And how old were you when you got your first full set?
I was about 13.
And what kind of clubs were those? Do you remember?
What were they? They called Ryder Cup, I think. I don't know. I don't remember what brand it was, but they called Ryder Cup.
Yeah. So how did you come to learn the game? Was it through your father? Did you have other teachers? Did you learn through observation?
Well, I think we were very lucky because we had an English. It was a lot of English teachers that would come over to Sweden at that time. And my coach's name at the time was Alan Anderton. And I think it was, I was just up at my club just a couple of weeks ago because they had sort of a reunion and a little bit in memory lane with them. But he was very simple. He made it fun. It wasn't a lot of thinking. It wasn't a lot of try to get the ball and really just try to learn to hit the ball in the sweet spot. It wasn't a lot of swing thinking, swing thoughts, you know. And, you know, if you want it shorter, you have a shorter swing. If you want it harder, then you hit it harder. And he was very good at trying to, for me to hit it long. So as a woman, I was always, well, as a girl, I was actually quite long from the beginning, which really helped, which was a big advantage. But I remember the big decision we had to make to go from the, you know, I'm so bad with the, what is called the, when they had more dimples, the little ball to the big ball. Oh, remember sure, that, yeah. Bruce, when we went from
sure
whatever?
I sure do remember that.
Yeah, and that was a big decision. And my coach said, but I think you're ready because you hit it long enough and you're not going to lose that much distance.
Did you play that smaller British ball?
Yeah.
The biggest problem I had when I changed with it was that big ball would curve a lot more than that little ball, and it was hard to keep from cutting too much or hooking too much. I don't know how you felt about it, but it was not easy.
But I think you guys probably hit it harder than we do anyway. So that was not – I really didn't find a big change. From what I remember, I didn't really find a huge change to change from the little ball to the bigger ball.
Did you play the small ball in competition as a junior, or was it already the big ball?
No, I think I must have. I think I must – yeah, I must have played a few competitions, like when I was 12 or something like that. But then – you know, when I was in the national team already at 14, I don't remember exactly when I changed, but I remember the only thing I remember is like my coach would have this talk with me that it's time to take the next step.
Yeah.
So funny.
Well, if you're like a lot of the players we've talked to, Helen, golf was still probably at a young age competing with some other sports you were involved in.
Yeah, I played the team handball, which is the way we played in Europe, where you have six players on each side. And then I played squash. It was nice, you know, those were winter sports. And then I had golf in the summer. And I was very lucky, I think, to play team sport handball because it gives you a good discipline as well. And you get to celebrate as a team and you are together. And work as a team, which is a lot of what sport is all about.
Now, team handball isn't that well known to Americans, but isn't that a game a little bit like basketball? The maybe the dribbling and passing is a little bit different, but similar to that.
Yes, but you have a goalie on each side, so you have six players, and you throw the ball in between, and you're trying to score behind the goalie. It's actually it is an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
But I know when I say handball in the States, they always think it's like in this cage when you just play with the hands.
Right.
But it is
right.
A team sport.
I think we saw the gold medal match in Atlanta in 1996. That was my first introduction to the sport. It keeps you in shape.
Yes, it keeps you in shape and it keeps you strong. And I think I really much like it still to watch the guys and the women. We have good teams in both sides in Sweden and they're very strong. There is no complaining, you know, I guess soccer players, the women in soccer doesn't play as half of what the men does. It's a tough sport. I really enjoyed it. I got a lot of energy that was burnt in those days.
Yeah. So why do you think you gravitated toward golf?
Well, you know, it's very interesting today when we sit here with all this, you know, information about the ADHD and, you know, all those. And I always wondered myself, what do I do in golf with my temper and the way my brain works? But I am a little bit involved with the ADHD Foundation in Sweden now because a lot of kids, it's been proven that some of the best sport for ADHD is actually golf because it's very simple. You're hitting it and there's the target and it's quiet and you do it on your own. And I think probably that fitted me when I look back on it. And just this when you practice and you go in your own world. And I still love to just hit balls and just to go in my own world and trying to hit the targets.
So the solitude of the game attracted you a bit?
Yeah, I think so. Or the challenge, because nothing was ever the same, you know, and you got the nerves and you learn how to deal with your nerves. And then when you had these tough shots that you have to do under pressure, I don't know, I really enjoyed those moments.
So you had quite a career as a junior and then as an amateur. You mentioned being the youngest player on the national team at age 14. What sort of handicap were you at that age?
I had 2.
So this is after your full set and you're still getting better.
I think we were all like that. I'm sure everyone that you interviewed and in every sport, it's like you always wanted to be better. You know, what do you have to do? What's the next level? And I think sometimes, not to go ahead of anything, but I think sometimes that's the problem today, that the kids don't want to take each level. You know, I took you become best at your golf club, and then you do best in your city, and then you do best in, in the next part, and then the national, and then you go international on an amateur level. And it's always nice to have these little, goals in front of you. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a long ways up to get to play on the tour, but that keeps mm-hmm. you going because there's always somebody that's better than you are.
Yeah. And when did the sport really take off in Sweden, where the national team and the youth development really became important?
Well, I think, I don't know, I remember so well in 1981, we were the first sort of group. It was a generation gap. Charlotte Montgomery and Pia Nilsson, who you know well mm-hmm. from the 54, Vision 54, they played. So they turned seniors, and we were the first sort of. So then 81, we played at Wentworth Country Club. And we had start doing fitness. And Sweden is blue and yellow, the flag. So we had this chicken yellow Adidas overalls. And we were running around within Wentworth neighborhood to warm up, before. And, Bruce, all these old men sitting in the clubhouse with the tie full of every lunch, a bit from every lunch the last month, and this little blue, whiskey nose, and was wondering, what are those people doing out there? Aren't they supposed to play golf? And then we ended up winning, and we were so young. And so fitness was quite early on. And I think that's when it's sort of starting to grow a little bit. And then we had success with that. And then people start realizing, well, it's not very expensive. And my dad would always say, well, the more I play golf, the cheaper it is. Because obviously you pay your dues at the golf course. And then the more you play, the cheaper each round gets. And my mom, who played bowling on a high level, is like, well, every time you go, you have to pay. So the more you play, the more expensive it's going to get.
So you've had a lot of opportunity to play on teams throughout your career. But as a junior, did you enjoy the team play more or the individual competition more?
Well, I was very lucky to, like I said, to be in the national team very early on. And I think when I first came to the States, they were wondering why golf was so popular in Sweden, because of the weather. Obviously, it doesn't really permit all year round golf. But I think when you have a small country and the federation can sort of bring in the best players together. And so we would meet in the winter and have winter training, and we would do physical activities, and we would do all kind of other sports together. And I think when you're young, 14, 15, 16, a lot of the girls quit in those that time, and we were all together, and we became old friends. And we from the north of Sweden to the south, and Lotta was obviously somewhere. She was around Stockholm, and then Eva Dahlu, who also played on the tour. We became very good friends, and even though we were friends, and we always competed against each other, obviously on all the junior events in order to qualify for the European team events, I enjoyed both very much to do, because if I played well by myself, then I was be able to make the team. So I got the best of both worlds pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Bruce, long before going to college, Helen had quite a bit of success in the junior ranks and as an amateur.
She certainly did. And I looked at her record and I'm wondering, you know, coming from Sweden, when did you think about sort of going outside the country to get an education as well as play golf? What precipitated that?
Well, Charlotte Montgomery had sort of started that. Charlotte and Pia Nilsson, they went to Arizona and they loved it. And when they sort of left, and I think they were well liked, they were good players, I think that opened the door for a lot of the other Swedes to come in. Obviously, we didn't really have the stats like they do now, but I had won quite a bit of tournaments and played well. So I got a chance to go to San Diego and and it was such a great time. I really enjoyed it. And that's when you meet all the other girls, you know, and they went on to turn pro. And so the LPGA became a little bit closer, even though it was still a long ways away, because you felt that they were so far ahead, you know, like a Nancy Lopez or and Pat Bradley and Patty Sheehan, and you know, they were just names that we read about, you know.
Yeah. Well, leading up to coming over here to school, in terms of some of the wins, and we don't have time to talk about them all, but there were quite a few. Swedish match play championship winner in 1986, 87, and 88 as an amateur. You had a chance to play on a team that Bruce has some affinity to, and this is, we're talking about the Espiritu Santo team, which is the women's team amateur competition patterned after the Eisenhower Trophy. You competed on the team for Sweden in 1986 and 1988. In the second playing of that, the 1988 team, you were team second to the U.S., and that one was played in Sweden.
Yes, it was. And it's so funny because this year's for the Senior Open, I met Ann Saunders. And, you know, she was on that team. I hadn't seen her almost since then. I mean, I don't know. She is almost 85 or something in there, I think.
She's come up a lot as we talk to Carol Semple Thompson and Marlene Street and Catherine Lacoste.
Yes, of course. I saw Carol Thompson. I practiced, played with her at the Senior Open for the practice round. Yeah. I've been so lucky to meet so many of these amazing characters that we've that America's had, that we've got to be a part of.
Yeah. Well, that world team competition for the ladies that I talked about, I want to say, and I got to think about this, whether it was Marlene Street now or Catherine Lacoste that played on the first Espiritu Santo team. And that probably goes back to about 1964, where the other fellow on your screen, Bruce Devlin, competed in the first Eisenhower Trophy team competition.
We're not going to say when that was.
Years before. It was only 30 years before that competition in Sweden. 1958, Old Course.
Yeah. Bruce, my God.
Bruce Devlin representing Australia as an 18-year-old Bruce?
Oh, no, I was older than that. I was born 37, so I was actually 21.
Bobby Jones is the honorary captain for the U.S. side, but the Aussies won the first competition. And Mr. Devlin, after an opening round of 80, wins the medalist competition.
Unbelievable.
How about that, huh?
Such a star.
Yeah.
And his first trip away from Australia too. That was his first trip ever outside the country, I think.
It's hard to go to Australia. I remember first time I went there and I had to go to, I think we stopped in Bangkok or something, and I almost cried going there from Sweden. And then when I get on the plane and they said it's another 8 hours, I thought I've had enough. I mean, I thought I'm just going to stay here. We played the world championship, something pair world championship down there, but it was beautiful. It's been a lot of trips to Australia since then.
Can I give you a postscript to that? That particular trip, and you, this is just confirming what you just said. When I left Sydney until I got to St. Andrews, it took me 52 hours. We went from Sydney to Fiji to Honolulu to Los Angeles to New York, about a six-hour layover, then to Newfoundland, then London, and then into Scotland. Amazing.
Oh, my God.
Hard to believe. That's, of course, you know, that was the days of the no jets, so it took a long time to do it.
Yes. Holy Moses, and I was crying. Well, yeah, no, it is. Those are the amazing memories, and you see where people are, you know, how fast it goes today to travel. Yeah, I mean, amazing. Considerably anyway.
Back to team play, 1987 European Ladies Team Championship at Turnberry, team win for Sweden.
I know. And you know what's very funny? Because I roomed with Eva Dolev, and we had never really played links golf. You know, it's such a different type of game. I remember I had this milkman that was caddy, typical, you know, Scottish guy. And we thought it was raining and it was so windy. So I asked him, I said, can it get windier than this? And he looks at me, ma'am, this is just a slight breeze.
Well, Turnberry's probably changed a little bit from that first time you were there. Have you been back since?
Yeah, I've been back when they changed. I think it was 17 they changed. And then I haven't changed it since Trump took over. But it was one of my absolute favorite golf courses for a long time. It just looks, when it's on that piece of property, it just looks and feels like nothing else was meant to be in that property.
Yeah, it's quite a beautiful place. The following year in that same competition, you went to Seve's golf course up in the north of Spain and had team third. What do you remember about that experience?
I remember we all got stomach sick. That seemed to be the thing when we went to Spain in those days. We all got stomach sick. And it was so funny. On the plane back, we were having to wear our national uniforms. And we were basically owning the bathroom and the airplane. And we couldn't really hide either because we had the Swedish golf team on our... So they, you know, there is the Swedish golf team and they're all not feeling so well. No.
It wasn't the blue and yellow overalls, though, that you wore at Wentworth.
No. This was actually proper clothes.
Would Seve's uncle Ramon Soto have been the pro back then or not?
He probably was. I don't really remember. We were just in awe because we all loved Seve. You know, he was our favorite kind of guy.
So tell us about the college decision, because that's kind of a big deal back then, right? Coming to America to play golf and come to a different country.
Yeah, well, I had a little bit of it. It was a little bit, I had family issues and my parents ended up having gotten divorced. And so I just decided to, I got some help to get into college in San Diego. One of the other Swedish girls had been there before. So they took me in. And then we had Gordon Severson. I don't know if you knew who that was, Bruce. He was working with them.
Yes.
Yeah, he was very good friends with the. I dropped the name. The guy who started the TaylorMade Steelwoods. So he was our coach, but we had to take a personality test with Gordon Severson, and when I came back, he says, "Well, it came back. You're totally uncoachable." So it was some tough years I went through with him.
Well, some of that maybe, you know, what was happening back home, what's happening with family situation, some of it probably part of your personality. I mean, I remember talking to Jan Stevenson, and as we got to know her better about her younger life, bit of a maverick. Certainly you wouldn't call her a conformist.
No, absolutely not. When I played with her in one of the tournaments, we were a team and nothing was ever good. No shot is good enough. And so I when she hit a really good one, so I just said, well, at least Jan, that is less shitty. because nothing was ever good enough.
So tell us about that college experience. Probably some ups and downs, I guess. You know, you're in a new world, and
yeah, it was tough. It was you know, we had a lot of experience in the national team. When I got there at 19, you know, we had played the world championship. We had played so many. So I knew, I mean, for me, the hard thing for me was that I had to be out there and hit balls for 5 hours. You know, I felt that my practice was quite efficient. I knew that if I hit the ball well that day, I mean, I couldn't do more that day if we were on the driving range. But we had to be there. And so I ended up sometimes not burnt out, but just beating balls for no reason when I could do other things. So I felt like I needed to study. So sometimes I didn't feel like I did anything really as good as I wanted to.
Were there ever any repercussions to you studying when you're supposed to practice?
Well, of course, because I was thrown off the team. I was second on the team, but then I was thrown off because I wasn't behaving. I didn't follow his orders. So, yeah.
But only, you know, once?
I'm kind of used to being in trouble. Hey?
You were only thrown off the team once?
Well, I mean, if you have to be that specific, Bruce, no, there were several times.
probably never lasted too long, though, huh?
No.
They took me back on the team.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us about the team experience. Any players that we would recognize today?
Well, not on my college. My college wasn't really, you know, was an international college. Actually, Alison, what's his name? The Irish guy that was the captain for the Ryder Cup. Paul McGinley.
McGinley, yeah.
He went there, but that was after me. He ended up actually marrying Alison McGinley, or Shapcott, which was her name in those days. She was playing when I was playing.
Okay.
But the good thing is we were Division One, which was nice. So we got to go and to play the best schools. We got to play, you know, obviously all the way to Georgia, and we were in Stanford and UCLA. And so I got to play a lot of golf with the top players or the top schools. Yeah.
Did you get to use your international business and marketing degree?
Well, not as much as I probably could have, but the good thing was that it gave me something to talk about with business people. You know, when we played with them, I could ask relevant questions and about their business. And that felt actually nice that it wasn't just about my golf, but, you know, how they ran it and how they marketed it and, you know, small things like that, which made sometimes it interesting for them, too, that it wasn't just about us.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from them, too.
When did you first start thinking about doing this for a living?
Well, it was actually in that Esperanto, you know, in 1988, I finished college and I came back home. And then we had an insurance company that sponsored the national team. And they gave us some money if we wanted to turn pro. And I thought, well, I have nothing else to do right now.
Might as well take a shot.
You know, take a shot. And so I played a year on the European Tour, became the Rookie of the Year because it was too late to go to Q School. And then I went to Q School, and then I forgot to enter in the final in Sweetwater, Texas. So I had to go back to Europe for a year. I won the British, and then I got to play in the first Solheim Cup. And then I went back to the Q School again and made it.
Yeah. So we don't want to skip over your very extensive modeling career.
Yeah.
It wasn't that extensive, really. It was that hop that we just did. It was just a little glitz.
Was that just right after college, right before you turned pro, or
no? Actually, that was before college.
Gotcha.
Okay. So that was when I made some really bad decisions. Looking back on it now, but at the time it seems to be brilliant decisions, but they obviously weren't in any way, shape, or form.
At that age, they're all brilliant decisions.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. No thinking. Oh, what's fun for now?
Thank you for listening to another episode of For the Good of the Game. And please, wherever you listen to your podcast on Apple and Spotify, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, spread the word, and tell your friends. Until we tee it up again, for the good of the game, so long, everybody.
Whack down the fairway. It went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just a smidge offline. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle, quite a way.